Hi, I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I'm excited to share some great news. Both the Saturday Show and the Sunday Show are available as a podcast. Every weekend, I look forward to bringing you the most important political news and the newsmakers who are creating policies that affect your life. For me, it's all about the conversation. That's when news is revealed and understanding begins. Search for Saturdays and Sundays with Jonathan Capehart and follow.
Good day, everyone. I'm Andrea Mitchell in Washington, joined here by Hallie Jackson and by Katie Turr in New York. As the January 6th committee shifts its focus today from the pressure on Mike Pence to Donald Trump's campaign to get state and local officials in battleground states to falsify election results so he could hold on to the White House.
So here is what and who to watch for 60 minutes from now when this hearing begins. State Republican officials from Arizona, the House Speaker there, Rusty Bowers, and from Georgia, you see him on your screen, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his deputy Gabe Sterling, all of whom faced relentless pressure from former President Trump and his inner circle of election deniers in the week after Joe Biden was rightfully declared the winner of the 2020 race. The committee is also going to introduce the country to the woman you see on the right, Wandrea Shea Moss, a Georgia elections worker who, along with her mother, faced down threats to her safety after being accused of being part of a conspiracy theory involving fake ballots. Totally debunked, by the way.
And most of the discussion heading into today's hearing surrounds Brad Raffensperger, who fought off a pro-Trump challenger in a state's primary elections earlier this month. Raffensperger was facing deep discontent from some Trump supporters for pushing back on Donald Trump in the days before the January 6th insurrection, refusing the former president's request to, quote, find the votes Trump needed to win that state.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state, and flipping the state is a great testament to our country.
So, ladies, in the hearings we have seen so far, each one of them has followed a pattern. Donald Trump was told that he lost the election. He told his supporters that he won anyway. Donald Trump was told that there was no fraud. He told his supporters that there was fraud. Donald Trump was told that Mike Pence did not have the power to overturn the election. He said Mike Pence had the power to overturn the election. I wonder if that's the same pattern we'll see today about pressuring state officials. And I'm also curious, Hallie, about what we're going to hear about Mark Meadows, what role he did or did not play in all of this.
Exactly. One of the 2 points that I'm looking for today, Katie, is the Mark Meadows factor. Congressman Adam Schiff, who's going to play a big part of today's hearing, talks specifically to his hometown paper about the potential for new evidence now to be introduced that directly, he says and suggests, links Mark Meadows to what we've seen in these states. So I do think that's something to watch for today. You know, I think the other piece of context just to remember here, the Republican officials that we're talking about, that we're going to hear from in the first part of this hearing, Rusty Bowers, Brad Raffensperger, Gabe Sterling. These are people who put their states, right, who put constitutional election law over loyalty to the party. But they are not, for example, anti-Trumpers. Rusty Bowers just this week to the Associated Press said that he would vote for Donald Trump in 2024 over Joe Biden. This is not an anti-Trump Republican, right? This is somebody who still backs Donald Trump, but who nonetheless resisted his pressure to try to overturn the legit election results. I think that's some context to keep in mind.
Exactly. Andrea. But the big difference today is firsthand evidence from the former president himself. This is the first time that we will have not just what people said that they said to Donald Trump, but this is the first time we're going to hear the voice, the words of Donald Trump. Sounding, some have compared this to, you know, a sort of criminal conspirator, a mob figure saying, I just need 11,780 votes. Get me the number of votes. One more. I just need one more, I'm paraphrasing, one more than Joe Biden got in order to basically steal the election in Georgia. And if he could do that in battleground states, enough battleground states, he could be declared the winner. So I want to bring in California Democratic Congressman and January 6th committee member Pete Aguiar, who, of course, led the questioning just last week when the committee focused on Donald Trump's pressure on Mike Pence, then Vice President Pence, not to proceed with the electoral vote count in Congress that certified Joe Biden as president. Congressman, thanks so very much for being with us today. You led the hearing, the testimony, and we know that this is not a court of law. This is not evidence, but it's presenting a lot of firsthand testimony, of course, of what people said to the president. We're going to hear from the president himself today, as we remember from that Brad Raffensperger call. But you said something that really intrigued me to the Washington Post. You wanted to somehow frame the questioning before you finished with your witnesses the other day, to reach your grandmother, to reach people who are more concerned, frankly, about the economy, about inflation, about the kitchen table issues that are really the headwinds against Democrats in this coming midterms, and to make people care about election security and about democracy. Tell us about that and how you think today's witnesses are going to accomplish that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the question, Andrea. And I think that's exactly what we need to do. We need to speak to as broad of an audience as possible. And I think that this hearing will do just that. This is a continuation of the theme that you talked about. So we know Donald Trump knew he lost the election. We knew he continued to perpetuate that lie. We knew that the pressure campaign on his own vice president, continued to build. And now the next step of that is talking about that moment in time and the pressure campaign that he leveled directly from the White House on these state elected leaders. So you have the Speaker of the Arizona State House as well as Georgia officials who will all say that they did the right thing, but that they also fielded a number of inquiries and a number of times where the president and Mark Meadows, Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman all pressured them. But we need to speak to that a broader audience. We need to make sure that the American people understand what we're trying to protect here. And it's this temple of democracy that's standing behind me, the image of the United States Capitol under assault. That's what we need to make real for folks.
Congressman Aguilar, it's Hallie Jackson. Thank you for being with us and for your time today. Let me step back and sort of look ahead a little bit here, because I spoke with a member of the January 6th committee who alluded to more witnesses having come forward, more potential witnesses since these hearings have begun in just the last couple weeks. I wonder what else you can tell us about who you are hearing from now, who has, for lack of a better term, maybe come out of the woodwork, right, to want to speak with you. How is that playing into these future hearings that you're scheduling? Are you reshuffling? Are you reorganizing? And what should we expect in the weeks to come here from your committee on that front?
Yeah, I think we are. There's always an opportunity to analyze and to continue the investigative piece of this. And like we've said from the very beginning, this is about putting together a puzzle for the American public. We know that a number of hearings are going to be a part of that. We want to make sure that we convey everything that we need to the public. And so we're looking at ways to do that, to continue to build off of this with future public hearings. But you're right. The chairman issued the tip line as well, and we saw a spike in the number of people who reached out to us with information after the chairman directly put the tip line information out there. We continue to hear information from folks who are going to be potential witnesses at future hearings. And so, again, this is about putting together as much information as possible for the American public. And so we want to make sure that we do just that.
Will you subpoena Mike Pence, the former vice president? Will you subpoena Ginny Thomas, wife of Clarence Thomas? Will we expect to hear from either one of those during the oncoming hearings?
Well, we haven't closed the door to hear from any witness. I'd keep in mind that, we've had 1,000 interviews. We've had just a handful of individuals who have testified publicly, but we've had over 1,000 interviews so far. So we continue to gather that information. And this isn't just about putting someone, in public. This is about making sure that we're true to the investigation. And so just because we're focusing on the hearings right now doesn't mean we have left the investigative phase. phase of what we're trying to do here. And so there will be new witnesses who will talk to us, some behind closed doors as well. And so both the chair and the vice chair have indicated, based on public reporting, that they would be interested in hearing from some of those individuals. And so, you know, we just haven't closed any door yet, and the committee will make that decision, you know, in the right course.
Congressman, you have a lot of material from aides, from lawyers, from Donald Trump's family, depositions, text messages, documents. You also have Donald Trump saying things in public. I wonder, do you have any documents from Donald Trump directly, any audio from behind the scenes from Donald Trump directly that you plan to share with the American public?
Well, as you previewed, you know, in this hearing today, we're going to talk a little bit about that, the state pressure campaign, and you'll hear, I think, a heavy dose of that phone call with Brad Raffensperger that the president had, where he continued to level the pressure campaign and continued to not only spew lies, but to tell the Secretary of State to engage in illegal behavior. And so you'll hear some of those things. I'm not going to get ahead of other evidence that we have or other ways that we will communicate that, but I think you can expect in future hearings to see both exhibits as well as you know, images and video that we have to share. So we've done a good job, I think, on the multimedia side of helping to convey exactly what this means to the American public, and we'll continue to do that.
Congressman Pete Aguilar, we could probably talk with you for the next 51 minutes. I know you have to go. Thank you for your time on what is a busy afternoon. We appreciate it. I want to bring in now some of our team of reporters who's covering this from every angle. NBC News senior Capitol Hill correspondent Garrett Hake, NBC News senior digital reporter Ben Collins, and NBC News Washington correspondent Yamiche Alcindor, also the moderator, of course, of Washington Week on PBS. And Garrett, let me start with you, because I think I see your shot. You're in the hallways. I'm sure there's a lot of activity here. I know that you have framed this, and I think smartly, Garrett, as kind of a prequel, right, this hearing to what we saw last week. Talk me through what you are expecting to see and what you've heard as you're talking to your many sources on the Hill about this.
Yeah, Hallie, if you were going to do these hearings chronologically, this hearing would have happened before the Pence hearing, because it's really the failure of this effort, as the committee will lay out, by President Trump to flip states, to find false electors, to find votes in states that weren't there for him, that as efforts like what will be laid out in this hearing started to fail, it was that increased the pressure on Mike Pence and increased the focus on January 6th. So a bit out of order if you were to do this chronologically, but really you could see today as the context for why January 6th ultimately did occur. It is this failure. And I think, you know, you guys were just talking a lot about Georgia. We all know the story about Brad Raffensperger. We know the story of the phone call. It was covered significantly in real time. I think what I'm going to be watching more closely here today is the Arizona portions of this. We know there was a pressure campaign in Arizona. We know Rudy Giuliani was involved in it. But we haven't seen as much reporting about the specifics of it, about exactly how it went. And the Speaker of the Arizona House coming to testify today, as you all pointed out, very much a pro-Trump Republican who got put in a very difficult spot by President Trump, I think is going to perhaps elicit more new information. The former president is already pre-budding his testimony, suggesting that perhaps there are tapes of his conversations with Rusty Bowers that might be detrimental to the Republican House Speaker in Arizona. So I think that's what I'm watching more closely here in terms of new information that pushes forward the committee's theory of this far-ranging conspiracy.
We're also going to have Katie Hobbs, who's the Arizona Secretary of State, a little later on this show, so please stay with us for that. Yamiche, I was talking about this with Hallie and Andrea just a moment ago. We've heard so prominently from White House lawyers, from aides, from some of the family members. We haven't heard a lot about Mark Meadows and the role that he played or did not play in all of this. Mark Meadows was Donald Trump's chief of staff. Is that going to change today?
It could change, Katie, and it is something that lawmakers absolutely want to make sure is crystal clear, which is that former President Trump wasn't alone in his pressure campaign when he was trying to get these state officials to overturn the election and to deliver their states for President Trump. I think it's interesting to think about the idea that Mark Meadows, being the chief of staff, someone who was receiving text messages from so many people, from reporters who were on the Hill, from conservative personalities who were saying that this needs to stop on the day of January 6th. He was, of of course, the president's right-hand man on the calls while the president was pressuring officials to change votes counts and to really overturn the will of the people. I think what's also really interesting here, and Garrett gets at it, we've heard so much about Georgia. I want to now, of course, hear about Arizona. I also remember in November when Michigan officials were summoned to the White House. I'm standing on the White House lawn when former President Trump had these Michigan officials in the White House and really, again, trying to pressure them to change the results of that election, even as votes were still being counted. So I think it's really important when I'm talking to my sources that lawmakers really want to get at the idea that this was not just a couple states, but that this was every single state that former President Trump thought he could twist arms for in order to try to wrestle back the election, even when it wasn't counted and even if it wasn't final. I think that's very, very important. I also think it's important about the politics of all of this. When we look at these Republicans, these are going to be people with bona fide conservative backgrounds saying this was wrong, what the former president was doing. And here's what he was trying to do. When I talk to ethical lawyers, they say this is what the lawmakers really want to hammer home here, that it wasn't a partisan issue, but that, in fact, these are Republicans talking about a Republican president doing something that was unlawful and that would subvert the Constitution.
And I want to bring in Ben Collins, because, Ben, the nation finally heard more about the conspiracy theory that Donald Trump had been spreading, that there was a suitcase of votes in Georgia. And now you have a local election official, Shay Moss, and her mother, both affected, because she can tell us exactly what happened during that vote counting, how the election falsehoods really impacted her life. And there were threats against her and her mother, the kind of threats we're now hearing about, you know, against members of Congress. We heard about from Adam Kinzinger.
Yeah, I think Ruby Freeman, who is one of these election workers in Georgia, who was kind of brought on because they needed some help from her daughter, Shay Moss, who is going to testify today. I think Ruby Freeman is a skeleton key here to this whole thing, to this whole intimidation effort. Ruby Freeman is seen on CCTV footage that was distributed by mostly by the guy who ran 8chan. His name is Ron Watkins. She is seen like placing some ballots atop a table, putting them back down. That to conspiracy theorists was enough to say that there was some shady business going on with this election. So what happened? Someone sent Kanye West publicists to her home to try to convince mm-hmm. her to admit to an election crime that she did not commit. And why was that happening? Who sent that person there? That's something I'm really interested in finding out today, in part because people, you know, in Congress who are pro-Trump were saying, we need some evidence. We can't just show up on January 6th with no evidence of election fraud, nobody admitting anything, and try to get people to overturn this election. So if Ruby Freeman was going to be a patsy here, we have to find out who exactly sent Kanye West publicists to her door. Thankfully, Ruby Freeman was strong enough in that moment to not just admit to a crime that she had nothing to do with. She was strong enough in her faith. She was a really, truly fascinating private figure in this whole situation. She's now suing a bunch of people who spread lies about her, like, you know, websites like Gateway Pundit. But, you know, what we need to find out exactly what went on that led people to her door in the days before January 6th.
And Ben, let me just follow up. When you talked about that suitcase, it was because that suitcase was just the way that election officials always bring votes from one location back to be counted. It had nothing to do with providing new Biden votes, as was alleged. It was a completely legitimate, normal procedure for that precinct, for, I guess, many of the precincts in Georgia.
Yeah, that video was combed over and over again by people like Brad Raffensperger, who have repeatedly said this is a very normal thing that happens when you're counting votes in the election. The problem was it was on CCTV, and that got through to 8chan and 4chan and all these people trying to prove some election conspiracy that didn't actually happen. And Ruby Freeman, who's a black woman, was a target of that mob. And by the way, you know, Donald Trump, in his calls to Georgia lawmakers, brought up Ruby Freeman, saying she was a scammer and a hustler. That's not what she was. You know, Ruby Freeman is somebody who ran a kiosk at the mall where she sold purses. This woman is not a professional political operative at all. She was a private citizen. And I think that's the chilling part of this whole thing. Anybody can be targeted in these moments of wild hysteria having to do with trying to prove an election was stolen that was not actually stolen.
And we've seen some very scary threats, including what Congressman Kinzinger has put out just today a letter that threatens his wife and his five-month-old daughter and himself, threatens their lives. Ben Collins and Yamiche Alcindor, thank you very much. And coming up, we have heard the infamous call where Donald Trump wanted Georgia to find those 11,780 votes. What will we hear about what led up to it and then followed it? And what exactly was Mark Meadows thinking about sending the Georgians who were conducting the state's audit? What was he going to send them? You're watching special coverage of the January 6th committee hearings right here on MSNBC.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Welcome back to our special coverage of the January 6th committee hearing. Chairman Benny Thompson is expected to gavel down at 1 p.m. The hearing will include testimony from state officials who were pressured by Donald Trump and his allies to overturn Donald Trump's loss. With me are Andrea Mitchell and Hallie Jackson. And joining us now, former U.S. attorney and senior FBI official Chuck Rosenberg. There he is. Former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance, former FBI Assistant Director for Counterintelligence Frank Figluzzi, and Atlanta Journal-Constitution political reporter Greg Bluestein. There you are, Greg. Correct name with your face. Everybody, welcome. All right, Joyce, let's talk about direct evidence. The Donald Trump phone call to find those 11,780 votes, that's direct evidence of him trying to find votes. And you could argue it's direct evidence maybe of a crime. Can you argue that? Is there going to be more direct evidence that we need to see to build that case?
This is sometimes, I think, a complicated inquiry for people who aren't trial lawyers, because we get hung up on this notion of direct evidence. And actually, trial lawyers can use direct evidence or they can use circumstantial evidence. And maybe this example will explain how that will play into today's hearing. If you and I watch it snow, then we can say that it snowed. That's direct testimony. If we go to sleep at night and there's no snow on the ground and we wake up in the morning and there's snow, well, there's a pretty good chance it snowed overnight. That's circumstantial. A lot of the evidence that we're looking at so far about the former president's involvement is circumstantial, right? Nobody's saying, I heard him say he knew he lost the election and wanted the people in Georgia to make up the number of votes that he needed. But his own words on tape, it's awfully close. It's very good circumstantial evidence that he knew what the numbers looked like. His campaign folks were telling him what the numbers looked like.
He knew the number that he needed to win.
One more, right? He asked for just one more than the number he needed. That looks awfully close to manufacturing ballots.
Andrea.
Chuck Rosenberg, we've heard the call from Trump to Georgia's Secretary of State that was just referred to, and the committee is now getting up to 20 hours of documentary footage from a documentarian, a filmmaker, Alex Holder, including raw video from the day of the attack, and also video leading up to the attack. How could that prove helpful? We haven't seen it yet. The committee is supposed to see it on Thursday, but he is now a cooperating witness.
Right. So as Joyce explained so well, Andrea, what he said, the words out of his mouth, get us closer to what he knew, right? So you also mentioned this at the beginning of the show, Andrea, and you're exactly right. Being told something is different than knowing something. What you are told gets you close to what you know, but not always. I mean, when I took calculus, I was told for an entire semester how calculus worked, but if you look at my exams, you would think I learned nothing. You'd be right. I was told about calculus, but I don't know calculus. And so when we listen to what President Trump said in his own words about what he believed and what he knew and what he understood, that gets us closer to being able to prove intent. By the way, I mostly agree with Joyce's analysis about the tape of the phone call between Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State. But he also says in that call, we won. If he actually believed he won, he didn't, by the way, but if he actually believed he won, then it becomes harder to prove that the call was fraudulent. And so the call is helpful to prosecutors, but it's not conclusive and it's not determinative. And hearing his own words about what he knew, and ideally admitting that it was a fraud, would get prosecutors to where they need to be.
Speaking of this call, Greg, nobody knows Georgia, I think, better than you and the dynamics at play here. Brad Raffensperger, Gabe Sterling, we will hear from them in just about 35 minutes from now. Brad Raffensperger, in particular, has said a lot publicly. I've interviewed him. I think Andrew's interviewed him. Katie, you might have as well.
He wrote a book.
He wrote a book, right? He's spoken to the Fulton County grand jury, reportedly, Greg. He's said a lot about this moment and about this phone call. What are you anticipating, Greg, new that we may hear from Secretary Raffensperger, or is this more about the committee looking to create a storyline here that they think will be compelling on the pressure campaign on officials like Raffensperger?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. I think it's about creating that narrative, that storyline. I've talked to some of Raffensperger's aides, people close to him, who indicate he has no big bombshell to drop today that would be new. You're right. He wrote a book about it. Millions of people have listened to that phone call. He's in the middle of a reelection campaign. He's talked about it on the campaign trail to countless reporters. There's not much more there that he can discuss, but we will hear probably from the investigators about the events that led up to that phone call, about his feelings, his emotions as he got that phone call, whether he felt coerced, whether he felt bullied. And also perhaps we'll hear from other Trump allies, whether it be Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina or other Trump supporters, their attempts to get Brad Raffensperger to toss out Joe Biden ballots or to overturn the election. So we might hear a little bit more about those efforts as well.
And so much of the testimony today is expected, especially with the local officials from Georgia, to be about these security threats, which we're seeing proliferating around the country, especially in battleground states. Frank Figlusi, there's now a new report from the Capitol Police, a new investigation showing a huge increase in threats against elected members. It's 1,820 threats in this year alone, in the first couple of months of this year alone. It's up 144% since Donald Trump was elected. So the security issue, and we've just referred a couple of times to Adam Kinzinger and some of the threats against him, we see security around several members intensified, and what just recently happened as well to the Supreme Court. So it's not just members of Congress, Supreme Court members, especially, of course, to Justice Kavanaugh at his home. So, you know, what can be done about this? What should be done about this? Is the FBI on this? Is it just the Capitol Police?
Indeed, the FBI is on it. In fact, the Attorney General has made sure that they're on it. And there have been public notices to elected officials, from school boards to election officials at the local, county, state level, that the FBI is involved in teaching them threat analysis, mitigation, security procedures. You'll even recall the Fulton County District Attorney, who's looking at this whole issue of Trump pressuring the Georgia officials, requested not too long ago FBI help in assessing the security threat around her office and what she's doing. So this isn't all happening in isolated, vacuum-like environments. This is tied to a strategy, namely by people like Steve Bannon, even the Proud Boys, who say, quote, we're going local. We're going to plant and seed people who will help change and control the outcomes of elections at local, county, and state level. So this kind of thing is not all isolated. And by the way, there's also an interesting FBI connection to Georgia here, because it's been glossed over in all the news of the day that we have to constantly keep up with. But it's been reported by multiple news outlets that FBI agents have actually interviewed multiple GOP officials, major prominent GOP donors, in Georgia, and issued subpoenas to former GOP officials in Georgia and ask them about whether they've had contact with Trump on the issue of the Georgia election. So this is not just a state or county investigation and grand jury in Georgia. It appears the FBI is all over the Georgia case as well.
So we're going to find out more about Georgia. We will see at least if we'll find out more about Georgia from these committee hearings. Again, as we've said, we've all heard that call between Donald Trump and Brad Raffensperger, and Raffensperger even wrote a book about it. One thing that I learned today, Joyce, that I didn't know yesterday, in an interview with the LA Times, Congressman Adam Schiff said the committee has text messages from Mark Meadows where he expresses a desire to send those who are conducting the Georgia audit autographed signatures, autographed MAGA hats. So autographed Make America Great Again hats, autographed by Donald Trump.
All of these little pieces add some color and texture to the story. And so to go back to Chuck's point about the need to have really clear evidence of what was going on, I think juries, if we were talking about a criminal case for sure, are interested in hearing about these little details that firm up the relationships. You know, this isn't something that you do when you're the president's chief of staff just for nothing. This is the sort of thing that you do when the relationship has been productive and the work has been productive.
Is it legal to send an auditor an autographed hat? I mean, where does the law stand on that?
You know, I guess it's technically okay to send something that's de minimis in value. That would turn more on Georgia state ethics statutes than anything else. It might be something that if you're the Georgia state auditor, you might choose in the exercise of discretion not to accept, to politely turn down. I'm not sure that I would say that it crosses over some sort of a legal line. But again, we have this sense that the White House is interfering in state and local elections in ways that the White House isn't supposed to. You know, there's a longstanding principle at DOJ that the Justice Department doesn't get involved in these investigations, that should in no way influence the outcome of elections. That's the problem here. It's clear that Washington is trying to influence the outcome of elections.
Well, thanks to Greg Bluestein. Thank you, Chuck, Joyce, Frank. Don't go far, because we're going to be checking back with you before the committee gavels in. That's expected around 1 o'clock, a little before for us. And coming up, what we could hear today from Arizona's House Speaker about the pressure he faced from former President Trump and Rudy Giuliani, Arizona's Secretary of State, joining us next. You're watching special coverage of the January 6th committee hearings on MSNBC. Stay with us.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Welcome back. While much of today's January 6th committee hearing is going to focus on Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 Georgia vote, the panel is also first going to hear from Republican Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers. Bowers was one of five people to receive the Kennedy Profile in Courage Award for his refusal to help Donald Trump overturn Arizona's presidential results, despite enormous pressure from the former president and his supporters. And just a short time ago, the former president put out this statement saying, quote, "In November 2020, Bowers thanked me for getting him elected. During the conversation, he told me the election was rigged and that I won Arizona. He said he got more votes than I did, which could never have happened. Bowers should hope there's not a tape of that conversation." Well, with us now is Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, who is seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. What is your reaction to the new statement from Donald Trump about Arizona's vote?
Well, I mean, it's just more of his false allegations about the election. It's not surprising, unfortunately, that he just continues to put out lies.
Secretary Hobbs, I have to ask you, one of the things, and I've talked with Jocelyn Benson and others who were involved on the elections on state levels here. And unanimously, it seems, I've heard one thing, people talking about the future, that this isn't about looking to the past and 2020. This is about looking ahead. I know that that is a sentiment that you share. Can you explain that? In other words, when we're watching what's going to go down in 25 minutes from now, right? And it is all very much looking back at what happened in 2020. What should we be thinking about as it relates to the next election to come, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously about so much more than January 6th and the events leading up to that. But what we're seeing is a concerted effort to continue to undermine our elections, to attack them, to install loyalists of the former president who will be willing to work to overturn results in the future if they don't like them. That's in addition to the attacks on voting rights that we've seen across the country based on the big lie. This is all a very coordinated effort to continue to attack our democracy and install leaders of the former president's choosing. And that's a big threat, not just to our freedoms to vote and the future free and fair elections, but many freedoms that we enjoy. I mean, we're seeing we're waiting for the decision to come out on Roe, but we know what that's going to look like. That's just the start of many more attacks on our freedoms.
So how do you restore the confidence? I mean, that's been eaten away by these conspiracies, by the former president saying that the election was stolen when it wasn't, by him singling out Arizona. How do you restore confidence in your state? And I guess I wonder if we can take that and apply it to the rest of the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important for leaders on both sides of the aisle to stand up and tell the truth about what happened in 2020, to provide that transparency into the processes that we oversee to make sure that voters and the public understand what is happening and that these allegations have no basis in reality. That's what we've been doing, part of how we're countering these attacks and will continue to do here in Arizona. It requires leadership, like from the Speaker Bowers that we're going to hear from today. And you know, both sides of the aisle need to be a part of this. We can't solve it ourselves on the Democratic side. And it's really unfortunate that the majority of the Republican Party has bought into these lies and falsehoods instead.
Secretary Hobbs, Republicans in your state recently lost a legal effort to end mail-in voting. But you said that this was the precursor for what they're going to try to do in 2024. Look ahead to what you see in 2024, given everything that's happened before and ongoing. And are you disappointed that Congress has not done something to at least close the electoral count loophole, which is so much a big part of the Mike Pence drama that was unveiled last week in the hearings?
Well, on a federal level, we need major reform to protect voting rights across the country. The Electoral Count Act is a small part of what needed to be looked at. So yes, I'm disappointed there, but I think that reiterates the importance of state-level elections because what happens in 2022 will determine what happens in 2024. The outcome of these races, state level races, the governor's race, secretary of state's race in Arizona. I mean, I'm facing a probable nominee on the Republican side who has repeatedly called to decertify the 2020 election, has refused to say whether she would certify it 2024. She was a party to the lawsuit to end early voting. And she's also filed a lawsuit to end the use of standard tabulation equipment, which would be a disaster for election administration here in Arizona. So she's not on the side of the voters for sure. And really, that's why I'm running for governor.
We have referenced a couple of times here on the show so far in our special coverage the growing concern about the potential for political violence, the increased number of threats against officials serving in Congress or elsewhere since the January 6th insurrection. You have faced some of this yourself. Well, can you tell us more about that? What did you hear?
Well, I mean, there were threats against me and my family in my life. I had armed protesters outside of my house. Those threats continued through the Maricopa County, the sham audit that drug on throughout the summer last year. But what I know is that this January 6th committee is the first step in accountability. And until these folks are held accountable at every level, this type of violence and threat is the new norm, and that is not acceptable.
Arizona Secretary of State Kitty Hobbs. We're grateful to you for your time and for being here with us. Thank you so much. Coming up here in our special coverage, the Pence factor, how the former vice president is handling the January 6th hearings as he reportedly considers a presidential run of his own. You're watching special coverage right here on MSNBC. We'll see you in a minute. We are back with the fourth January 6th hearing set to begin just a couple of minutes from now. You are looking at that in that big box on the left side of your screen. Right before we came back from commercial break, we saw Officer Daniel Hodges, Officer Harry Dunn again in the room. They have been there for, I think, all or most of the hearing so far, Andrea and Katie. I'm joined, of course, by Andrea Mitchell and Katie Turr with the focus on today's session on former President Trump's pressure on state officials to try to overturn the 2020 election. You're going to hear from that, from the witnesses who will take those seats in probably the next 10, 15 minutes or so. Officials who resisted that pressure, allowing, of course, for a transfer of power that followed the Constitution. I want to bring in now a couple folks to talk about this. NBC's Dasha Burns, who is on the ground for us in Marietta, Georgia. We'll start with you, Dasha, and what you're hearing from folks that you're talking to there. How much are they paying attention to what's going down in our neck of the woods?
Well, Hallie, I talked to voters around the first hearing, and I definitely have a sense that people are not paying as much attention. This isn't the same kind of grab your popcorn, silence your phone, schedule that viewing type of television. But they are paying attention, especially now with their Secretary of State in the spotlight today. There are two themes that I heard from my conversations with voters: truth and accountability. Everyone I spoke with, and these were folks across the political spectrum, believed it was important to hold these hearings and it was important to get to the truth of what happened on January 6th. But when it came to the accountability factor, people were very skeptical that they would see that part of things come to fruition here. Take a listen to what I heard.
You got to be honest if you're in politics, and most of them aren't honest. But I hate to, I don't know what the outcome's going to be yet.
It all depends on how that ends up going down the line. Someone can tell you exactly what happened and the truth, but that doesn't mean that people are going to act on it.
As far as anything happening to the person that we're dealing with, I don't think it's going to weigh anything.
You don't think there's going to be accountability here?
No.
Now, Hallie, people were eager to hear from the Secretary of State. They, of course, know about the phone call. They remember most people I spoke with reading about it at the time or hearing it at the time, but they are eager to hear him talk about it in his own words, what that experience was like, and see what else might come out today that they haven't yet learned about.
Let's stick with this reaction and go to NBC's Vaughn Hilliard, who's in East Peoria, Illinois. Vaughn, Vice President, former Vice President Pence spoke there last night. He made a quick allusion to what is going on with these hearings. What are you hearing from folks out there? Are they telling you that they're paying attention? Are they caring?
You know, I talked to one gentleman here in Peoria, Illinois last night. He was one of about 600 GOP county activists here that listened to about a 45-minute speech by the former vice president. He notably told me that he had watched part of the hearings and actually appreciated the role that Mike Pence played on January 6th. But ultimately, there was a head nod to the power structure that Donald Trump still plays within this political party today. And despite Mike Pence being that central figure on January 6th, you are not hearing him go around this country or even take part in interviews in which he is talking about his role that day or the danger that he faced or just how close the peaceful transfer of power was to being obstructed. Take a listen, though, to the subtle hint, the subtle nod that he did give to January 6th in his hope for these months ahead for the Republican Party. Take a listen.
You know, we've all been through a lot over the past several years. A global pandemic, social unrest, a divisive election, a tragic day at our nation's capital. So now is the time for us to have the courage of our convictions, to stand firm, to speak boldly, with stout hearts. You know, elections are about the future. And in the days between now and Election Day, let's cast a positive vision for the future, for the American people.
Guys, and if I may, let's look at it this way. 18 months ago, was the January 6th insurrection. 18 months from now, we're looking at the Iowa caucuses to help determine the GOP nominee for president in 2024.
Interesting timing, and of course an important reminder, because Republican National Committee former chairman, MSNBC political analyst Michael Steele, Pence has his eye, as does Donald Trump potentially as well, on 2024. And Mike Pence is really not even walking a tightrope here. He is all in that speech last night. He's avoiding the January 6th last year, you know, what happened 6 months ago, and not accepting or embracing this, hero label that was attached to at least his behavior that day. And a lot of people criticize, right. Well, why did you wait so long? Why did you wait till, the 12 o'clock hour on that very day, which is almost 1 o'clock, an hour before the breach, when it was already too late to turn the mob back, to declare that you were not going to go along with this conspiracy to overturn the election, basically, by stopping the count. So what about Mike Pence? Complete loyalist. I've seen him in all parts of the world on my foreign trips with him, declaring in really hostile places, people who were hostile to Trump, I bring you greetings from the greatest president of the United States, Donald J. Trump,
right.
In silence at international gatherings, embarrassingly so. So how does he deal with this when Trump still has a hold on so many people in the Republican Party? He's going to have to run in a Republican primary or in a caucus in Iowa first up.
Yeah, he's got to figure out what path he wants to take. I don't see it as a tightrope. In my estimation, I think he has a lot more power and ability to influence than he may give himself credit for. He asked the question, he made the comment in the piece coming in, have the courage of our convictions and stand firm. Well, okay, what are your convictions when it comes to January 6th and what happened to you, knowing that the president of the United States wanted you dead? And what are you standing firm for or against relative to that? He's not going to get through a 2024 cycle without having to confront and address that part of his involvement in that and what he felt, what those pictures showed us that we've seen, the still shots of him in that garage, waiting there on the phone, trying to figure out what's happening. And in fact, calling command shots, being the commander in chief at that moment. So I don't think this is going to be as easy for him as he may think or some of his people may think. He's going to have to address it. He's going to have to address it head on. I think he should. I think he should lean into the role he played that day to create that separation, to reorient, if you will, Andrea, the footing of the GOP away from Trumpism and towards the brand of conservatism that we all know Mike Pence really believes in.
Wait, so here we are. Go ahead, Andrea.
Katie, I just want to put a pin in that, is that Adam Schiff, certainly with Rachel Maddow, was indicating that he's not going to be testifying to this committee.
All right, so the hearing room a moment ago, or now I should say, is filling up. We are about 5.5 minutes or so from 1 o'clock, which is when we expect this hearing to begin. Michael, stick with us. Let's also bring back our panel, Chuck Rosenberg, Joyce Vance, Frank Figluzzi, Michael Steele, and Ali Vitale. Ali, I want to begin with you. The other day when I was on the Capitol, I spoke to Lindsey Graham, and he said he wasn't going to watch the first hearing. He was going to go to dinner instead, and then he denigrated the committee. Now that 20 million people have watched these hearings, it seems each one, 6 in 10 Americans and say the president should be charged. Is that changing the way that Republicans on Capitol Hill are seeing this hearing?
I think that when you think about Republicans on Capitol Hill and the way they're viewing this hearing, you go a step deeper in that poll and you kind of see what's shaking out here on Capitol Hill. If 60% of Americans think that Trump should be held accountable in this, when you actually break it down at the Republican level, I think in that poll, it's just shy of 20%. I do think that that's kind of what we're seeing here in the halls of Congress. It's not to say that every single Republican in this building is ignoring the fact that these hearings are happening. I think actually many of them are aware. It's whether or not they're willing to speak to them in a candid way. Of course, those who do, and Vaughn and others who are out on the campaign trail right now will tell you this, you are added to the list of Trump's vendetta campaign. I do think that the interesting thing that's happening, though, around Trump's response to the way that Republicans on the Hill have handled this is the way that he's seemingly going after Kevin McCarthy for not having Republicans on this committee. Of course, we know that the Republicans that McCarthy wanted to put on this committee were people like Jim Jordan and Jim Banks. In many cases, those are people who are allies of the former president, and they were blocked from being on this committee in large part because many of them voted not to certify the election results. Certainly, that's the crux of being on this committee. At the same time, though, Republicans are feeling like they lack the visibility into what this committee is doing. Things like subpoenas and witness testimony, they really have no insight into what this committee is doing right now. That's a key point there that Republicans are now grappling with as these hearings go forward.
Ali Vitale, thank you so much. We'll look for you during any breaks in the hearings. And of course, as we keep up our special coverage afterwards, you are looking live now again at that committee room. The witnesses in the room seated, the shot pulled back, so it's not quite as close of a look as we had gotten. But you can see the absolute scrum of photographers, of media in the room. And there, of course, the shot from behind. And you can see soon the dais will be filled with members of the January 6th Select Committee. Michael Steele, let me go to you for a moment, and let me bring back up what we sort of started this programming with, which is this idea of the people that we're about to hear from. And you see the three of them seated there, including Rusty Bowers, who, as Ali referenced, was attacked within the last 52 minutes, I think, by former President Trump. Again, these are Brad Raffensperger, who just won that very contested primary race in Georgia, right? Essentially, a call from voters that they backed him and his actions, that the sort of Trump loyalty test only goes so far. The point that I think is interesting with Rusty Bowers is he still supports Donald Trump. He would still vote for Donald Trump again. These are not rhinos, quote unquote, Republicans in name only. These are people, especially in the case of Mr. Bowers, who legitimately believe in the party, who just couldn't cross this bridge for Donald Trump. Where do you see their place in the party, Michael?
Okay, so first things first, their only real rhino in all of this is Donald Trump. So we'll just go with that. Secondly, these three gentlemen, like a lot of other Republican elected officials who stood on the side of holding the line, have demonstrated that they can create that separation and survive. They can be supportive of Trump policies or whatever, and survive. So they really are, I think, a testament to the idea about what really happened that day, the role that Trump may have played in trying to put pressure on them. That's what this conversation is going to be about coming up. And I think it'll be an instructive sort of framing for America, this sort of dichotomy in one sense that you'll have someone who says, yeah, I would vote for Trump again, but at the same time testify to what Trump did that day and why that is important at this time, going back to the accountability question, to hold people accountable for what happened on that day. We'll see how the public ultimately receives it. But I think it's very dramatic and telling that they're here in large measure surviving the slings and arrows from Trump and Trumpists out there. And about ready to testify to what Trump, how Trump tried to bully the narrative and push them to do something unconstitutional.
And Chuck Rosenberg, I may have to interrupt you, or you may be about a minute away from them gaveling down, but just writ large, does it have to be evidence of a crime in order to grab America's attention to the fact that a president of the United States, when he was president, was not only pressuring his vice president, but pressuring state, local officials around the country, try to overturn an election?
That's such a good point, Andrea. No, it was a crass, unlawful attempt to hold on to power illegitimately. And that fact ought to be enough to make sure that this man never holds office, let alone the office of the president again. If there are crimes, and I'm not just talking about Trump here, but some of his underlings, then we ought to consider holding people accountable for that. Absolutely. But just looking at the behavior, looking at the conduct, that ought to be enough to turn off anybody, to convince anybody who watches this fairly and with an open mind that this man should never be in power again, should never be trusted with that esteemed office.
And as we see, the still photographers, Chuck and Frank and Michael, in the well there, taking pictures of the witnesses. You see Brad Raffensperger sitting in the middle of the Georgia Secretary of State, who has been on all sides of this, you know, pressured. Benny Thompson coming in now. He's going to take the gavel. We're going to hear from Benny Thompson with an opening statement first, then we'll hear from Liz Cheney, and then Adam Schiff, for certainly very familiar to all of our audiences, who was elected in the 2000 cycle and then became so much more better known, of course, through the both impeachments and as head of the Intelligence Committee and also as the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee when the Republicans still held the House, battling all the time with the Republicans over the Intelligence Committee and over whether or not there were leaks from either side.
And what's interesting, too, is Congressman Schiff has talked about how for this investigation from this committee, so many more witnesses speaking on the record, so much more information than from what he got when he was involved with the prior impeachment, Andrea.
The huge frustration for impeachment, Katie and Hallie, was there. We hear the gavel. So we are going to hear from Chairman Thompson.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I'm excited to share some great news. Both the Saturday Show and the Sunday Show are available as a podcast. Every weekend, I look forward to bringing you the most important political news and the newsmakers who are creating policies that affect your life. For me, it's all about the conversation. That's when news is revealed and understanding begins. Search for Saturdays and Sundays with Jonathan Capehart and follow.